Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome, everybody, to Apple Pie Playground, where we enjoy a little healing for the heart every Sunday afternoon. I'm your host, Valerie. It's so great to be here with you. And I want to thank you, BBS Radio, for all that you do behind the scenes to make our Sunday afternoons as wonderful as they are. This show brings in a little bit of therapeutic gameplay as we spend some time together, and then we add in some self-reflection about the subjects that we like to talk about. And so today we'll talk a little bit about some interesting new research on the heart-brain connection and how it applies to how we think about spirit energy. But one thing that we haven't done in a while is share a Dixit card together. So I thought maybe that might be a good place for us to start today. So as you'll recall, a Dixit card is a card that describes a scene that we can all use to pull out deeper meaning, right? And the meaning is going to be different for everyone. We will read the card differently and we will create a scene in our mind in a way that's very personal to us. And it just helps us move subconscious information into conscious awareness and have a little bit of fun doing it. So if you can, grab your notebooks. If you need something to write with or write on, get that and take a minute. We'll all start together. Just find something to write with and something to write on, and then we can we will start our Dixit card. And if you have a notebook, it's super easy just to get in there and take notes and work with your Dixit cards there in your notepad. So we're going to imagine a scene, okay, where we are standing at the front door of our house and we're looking out. We're looking out across the front yard, okay? And our house has been tied to a huge hot air balloon, okay? Can you imagine that? Picture that. And you are ready for liftoff, okay? And so the house is lifting off of the ground and into the air, okay? And now you are floating over your property and out into the clouds. Okay, you have the scene there. Now, this is where we ask ourselves a few questions and see what comes up. Okay, so question number one, where are you going? Where are you going? And you can jot your answers down in your notepad if you want to. Where are you going? Do you want to go there? If you are going in a certain direction, do you want to go? You can ask yourself why or why not if you'd like to. Okay. Now, thinking about it as you travel there in the clouds, when your house sets down, where do you want it to land? When your house sets down, where do you want it to land? And you can jot down your answers if you want to. Maybe take a look at them a little later. Think a little more about it. What we're really doing is bringing, you know, our subconscious thoughts into conscious awareness. And so the last thing we'll do is, as we're working with our Dixit card, is we will just sort of feel into the scene and think about the feelings that arise, and we can capture those on paper if we'd like to. What feelings are arising for you as you work through this Dixit card? How do you feel about being in your home under a big balloon in the clouds, floating away somewhere? You might want to capture those thoughts. And then later on, you can sit down and think about it and see what that might mean for you. Right? Our goal is to pull our subconscious thoughts, subconscious ideas into conscious awareness and see what that brings up for us. We don't want to necessarily judge right now. We're just recording information and the way we feel and the words coming to our minds and see where we end up. I'd like to share a little bit of new research together this afternoon. It's very exciting research, and you can find the information on heartmath.org. It's in the Mind Muscle blog there. It is peer-reviewed research, which is exciting, and it's new in the field of neurocardiology. And that's a very interesting word when you break down the ideas there. So let's go through a few of the ideas in the research because they're quite exciting. And I thought perhaps you'd like to hear what's coming out about the sensory experiences and relationships between the heart and the brain and how that's really redefining our capacity to understand, you know, the spiritual expression of ourselves in a human body. So the research has revealed that the heart is actually also a sensory organ, just like the brain. It processes physical information through the nervous system. Okay. And what that means is that the heart is actually problem solving. It's gathering information and it's putting that information to use, which is extraordinary when you think about it. So the research is suggesting that the heart actually emits the body's most powerful electromagnetic field, not the brain. Okay, not the brain. We've always thought that the brain was the center of the electromagnetic forces of a body. Turns out that's not the case. The heart has 60 times more electromagnetism than the brain does, according to new research, right? And that's exciting because what that means is the heart is actually sending energy flow into every cell of the body, okay? The brain actually is not the guiding energy center of the body, like, you know, we've always believed it to be. In fact, the heart is the superior magnetic field or energy field in the body. Well, you know, we've talked about this. We kind of know this intuitively, but it's gratifying when research, scientific research, can come out and reinforce things that, you know, in terms of ancient spiritual communities, we've always known. So that's very gratifying. And it matters because, you know, the heart's energy field really is our integration point with spirit energy. And we know this as well. But now we can use scientific language to talk about something that is provable somehow as in this human role play that we're engaging. Proving information is an important thing, right? It's how we get folks to consider what we're saying as legitimate. So I suppose research proving to us that these things that we've always known to be true are actually true, you know, can be useful in some capacity. And so it's exciting to see this in print. Now, like I said, you can go to heartmath.org for more information. And we'll talk some more about other things that have been revealed with respect to new research. Now, like I said, some spiritual communities have always known this, and they call it aligning our heart space with their body. And they will use terms like the body having the intelligence of the heart. It's called the intelligence of the heart. This is what runs our physical system alongside our spiritual divine energies, right? So it's the idea that the heart has the mechanics to integrate spiritual energy into the body's functions. And just to be able to say that with a straight face and know that it's an idea that we can represent not just in a spiritual way, but in a scientific way that allows folks who are maybe not in our sphere of influence spiritually to gather information and begin to understand what we know in a more concrete way conceptually. And that could be very helpful for folks. So let's take a look at this heart-brain relationship together. And what do we mean? What do we mean when we say that we experience conscious awareness or energy alignment in accordance with this new research? What could we possibly mean? How far can we extend those ideas? And what the research suggests is that the heart actually communicates with the brain. And research calls it a rhythmic electromagnetic field that the heart creates. So the heart knows how to ask for information that it needs from the brain. And in fact, the heart actually sends information to the brain's higher brain centers in order to influence higher order thinking that we perform in our brains, like cognition, perception, emotional processing, right? According to the new research. So we might ask ourselves, what is a higher brain center, right? What does that mean? Well, that's the critical thinking part of our brain. Okay, the critical thinking part of our brain. And so we might ask, the question is, how could we optimize the communication going on between the heart and the brain? And the research suggests that we can do that in a very specific way. And that is that we are using positive emotions like gratitude and compassion to sync the brain with the heart. Right? This is an actual suggestion of the research. And that means that the more gratitude and compassion that we can experience as a physical experience, right? Then the more aligned we are in our heart space, and the more aligned our heart is with our brains, with the higher brain centers and the cognitive centers of our brains. And so this is really huge, friends. This is really huge because when we want to develop conscious awareness and we say, okay, well, this isn't just pie in the sky, spiritual, something that we sit down and cross our legs and meditate and do. We really want to capture our capacity to be energized by this conscious awareness. We want our energy flow to engage what is spiritual and eternally conscious as source awareness. And how do we do that? And linking our brain to our heart is a wonderful opportunity because it lets the heart then guide and inform the cognition and the cognitive parts of what we do as humans. And we've talked about the subconscious suitcases that we store in our brains, right? That bring up all kinds of old trauma. And now we have the opportunity to think about that in a slightly different way. We can think about how emotional processing can really bring together the traumas that we're experiencing and a way to manage the cognition coming out of our subconscious, right? And we can do that building in acts of gratitude and compassion and sinking the brain to the heart. How might we do that? Well, we can perhaps begin to recognize what's coming out of those suitcases, right? As we try to become conscious of our behavior, conscious of what we're thinking and feeling, we can start to recognize those triggers, right? We can aspire to a routine of compassion around those triggers, around the behaviors of other folks, things we don't really particularly like in someone else. We can recognize that perhaps that is an unpacking of their very own subconscious suitcase. We can create compassion around that, right? We can make healthy behavior choices to minimize the effect of triggers, right? We can do things like, you know, we talk about it all the time, setting boundaries for others to respect. So there's lots to consider here. And it's very gratifying and satisfying to know that research like this allows us to engage in a meaningful way, conversations that can lead us to real-time energetic transitions in our own bodies, right? How do we go from a physical reaction to a subconscious trauma that's come into light? And we can actually recognize that the heart has a capacity to engage those traumas. And we, with our practices and our habits, can put into conscious affect behaviors that can manage and address what's coming out of those suitcases. And that's, you know, a very powerful pathway for us, you know, a path to walk, a pathway for our cognition to flow into our hearts and vice versa, and a path for us to walk as spiritual beings looking for solutions and ways to engage our spirit essential selves, right? Our spiritual selves essentially in a human body. So that's a lot to take in. It was exciting to share with you. And so I'm thinking maybe now let's play a little bit for a while. So if you have a pen and a piece of paper, grab your pen and piece of paper. If you have a notebook, grab your notebook as well. Anything to write with and anything to write on. Let's just take a deep breath and play for just a little bit and enjoy this time together. Remember, this really is a gift of self-reflection, and we want to observe our good work here without judgment. Right? This is how we grow. And we want to have a little bit of fun. And so I want to introduce to you an activity that's, you know, that's very popular in play therapy. So you may have heard of it. But what we're going to do is we're going to grab a piece of paper. And I'm hoping that you've found a pen and a piece of paper. We don't want to leave anybody behind. If you have a notebook, grab your notebook. We are going to draw a very simple scene on our sheet of paper, okay? A very simple scene, okay? And in this scene, let's draw a simple boat out on the water, okay? We're drawing a simple boat out on the water, okay? And then we're going to draw a lighthouse in the scene. I will leave it up to you as to where you'd like to put your lighthouse. Okay. We're going to draw a simple boat out on the water and a lighthouse. Now, the lighthouse beams are flashing. Okay. So the lighthouse beams are flashing. Okay. In your picture. Now, draw yourself in the boat. Okay, stick figures are welcome. They count. Draw yourself in the boat, right? And you're in a simple boat. There's a lighthouse in the scene. The lighthouse beams are flashing. You are in your boat with your little stick figure, thumbs up, right? And now a storm is blowing through your scene. So draw the storm as it's coming in. Draw the storm as it's coming in. Okay? And you're in your boat. And there's the lighthouse. The beams are flashing. The storm is rolling in, and you're going to draw the storm. Okay? Hopefully everyone has captured the scene on paper. It's whatever you want it to be, right? Now take a minute and reflect on the picture that you've drawn. Reflect on the picture that you've drawn. Take it in. Okay? Let's ask ourselves a couple of questions. Okay? And the first question I want to ask you is the light, the beam from the lighthouse flashing toward you in the boat? Is the beam from the lighthouse, is it beaming toward you in your scene? Where is your beam beaming? Where's your light beaming from the lighthouse? Where is that light going? Okay, let's reflect on that. Where is that light going? Is it pointed at you? Okay, so if it is not pointed at you, will you please take just a moment and redirect that light onto you and your boat? Go ahead and redraw that light. Let's get that beam onto our boats, right? While we have a chance here, we're just going to redirect that beam onto our boats. Got it? Okay, next question. You are in your boat. Okay. You have a radio to shore. So you have a ship to shore communication. It's kind of iffy, but you have an open line. You can contact the lighthouse keeper. Okay. But the thing is, you may only have time really for a quick message before the signal might go down again. Okay, so you only have time for a very quick message. Okay, so take a minute and think about what would your communication be to the lighthouse keeper? What would you say? What would you say real quickly on your radio? What would you say? Write that down if you want to on your paper. What do you say to the lighthouse keeper? You don't have much time. Okay, write that down. And we're going to revisit this. We will come back to this because it's fun and we have a couple more questions we might ask ourselves about this activity. I hope you enjoyed this first part of the lighthouse activity. We will come back to it. It's a super fun thing to do together. So I'd like to turn our attentions now to being intentional and the idea of being intentional. Let's talk about what that might mean, right? To be mindful or present or non-judgmental. All of those things are connected, aren't they? And so I want to think about this thing that we do as humans, right? We do this thing. It's like we can't help ourselves from doing this thing. We do it all the time, every day. We are born into doing it. We learn how to do it better. We go to work to keep doing it. We get raises because of how we do it. We save our money to retire from doing what we do, right? So we don't have to do it anymore. And then we retire and then we keep doing it, right? And that's this thing that we do, creating rules and codes and regulations and restrictions and a social code of how it is that we manage our lives together on this planet, right? Now, we don't spend our lives learning how to experience natural law, right? We move away from this construct of natural law and, what naturally happens. And we just start creating all of this other manufactured kinds of codes and rules. And the thing that's fascinating about this thing that we do is that these constructs that we build, like from the day we were born, right? The day we were born, it pulls us deeper and deeper into the brain and what the brain does, which is wired for rules, right? It's wired for rules. Things are yes or no. Things are black or white, good or bad, right? And so the old adage comes into play. If all you have is a hammer, right? Everything looks like a nail. And so we hammer away our whole lives. We just hammer the hell out of our lives, don't we? Because of this thing that our brain does, and that, we rely on our brain and we just continue to build onto this cognitive experience of coding and rule making and that's our lives, right? Our human lives. So at some point, many of us sort of step back and we think, well, in our eternal divine selves, we're not polarized like that, right? We're not either or. We're not separated by opposites. In fact, we're whole and we're integrated, right? This is who we are as divine beings of light. And somehow that's so different from this role play that we have as humans here in this particular physical experience. It's so very different, isn't it? And we've forgotten who we are as beings of light. And actually, some of us talk about, who we are as beings of light in a very symbolic kind of a way. It's so distant from our real, true experience. It's hard for us to believe that, in fact, we really are beings of light. I mean, yes, it's symbolic, it's beautiful, right? But can it be true? And friends, in fact, it's very, very true. We are beings of light. We are more likely beings of light than we are any brain that we've built and encoded, for sure. How is that possible? Well, I'm going to go briefly back to quantum mechanics, and I'm just going to touch on it, and then we'll move away. Okay? We won't do a deep dive because I'm not. I don't have so much capacity to talk about the science of those things, but I do know, I think, what inherently we all know about the idea in quantum that somehow spiritual energy has to have something that is real to it. We keep talking about it through the ages. There has to be something that is real to the energetics of what we talk about when we talk about spirit. And in fact, you don't have to look hard to find that there's actually an equation that actually does explain how energy and frequency do combine to create light in everything. And it is our essence. It's a real thing. So it's a real equation that really does describe what light energy is as a force of all creation. Okay? So when we refer to being light and we want to feel like that it's beautifully symbolic, which it is, we need to understand that it's really actually physics, right? It's like it's a real thing. Pulling light energy into the body is a real thing, folks. It's energetics at work, okay? It's real energy exchange. Now, the reason that I'm bringing that up is when we think about Christos energy, Christ consciousness, and the good work of Christ, we think of a lot of what he had to say as symbolic, and it sounded beautiful and it was powerfully symbolic. In fact, friends, ladies and gentlemen, Christ was being very scientific in what he was trying to explain, right? His references to light and being light wasn't necessarily symbolic as much as it was the science. And his teachings are about the energetics of who we are, our cosmic beingness, right? Apart from this role play that we're in right now as a physicality. And that's an important thing to understand, that we can be assured that when we talk about our essential selves, our spiritual selves, we're not just talking about some symbolic, beautiful, ethereal idea that is metaphorical and it's poetic, which it is. But it's actually the events and circumstances of a cosmos. It is the energy flow of who we really are. It is what will remain when every single physical body is gone from this realm. Okay? It is what remains. And that's meaningful because we live in a physicality that codes reality with rules and requirements and restrictions, right? And we perhaps don't appreciate the fact that our universes of universes, our cosmos, is actually coding reality as well through these quantum energetics that we can condense into mathematic equations of reality, right? We are part of that. We are creators, right? Encoding reality in every single spiritual act that we perform. We encode our self-expressions, right? We have encoded ourselves as being human in this human experience. We are divine beingness, even as our doingness alters its reality, which it can do, and it will. It will alter our role play, our physicality. That will alter that many times over. But we can't remember those things, do we? We're starting to remember. We're starting to remember. The idea is, though, that, it's easy to be trapped by brains, right? Brains that build worlds through perception and cognition as our only codes, right? We're coded to a physical form. And that's very limiting, right? It's hard to live our way out of that. When it's what we do all day, every day, we code this physical form that we're in. And we forget about this divine design, right? And we just code into becoming something of our own non-player characters in a human video game, right? If we're not careful. If we're not careful. Because we're judging our reality really based on how our brain perceives a physical reality. The brain keeps building it and building it and building it. And every rule and regulation and restriction and code and law keeps building that cognitive physical reality. Now, you add to that the idea that many of us are on autopilot much of our day, right? We're on autopilot. What attention does the spirit actually get from us in all of that work to maintain a physicality, right, through our brains? So where do we lose ourselves in this video game? What is our way back? How do we lose ourselves? And I just want to point to something that in my mind, is a real starting point for the conversation. It's a real foundation. It's a cornerstone in my sense of how we actually do lose ourselves, and what really takes us away from the mindfulness that we can operate with as we want to engage a more spiritual, energetic self-expression in this role play that we're in. And that's the idea of judgment. Judgment. When you think about it, judgment is a cycle of the mind. I would say that probably every single thing that our brains do attaches to a judgment. Attaches to judgment. We form conclusions. We do this naming and blaming kind of thing, right? We compartmentalize ideas and information. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it important? Do we throw it away? Do we retain it? Do we want to remember it? Should I write it down? You know, do I put it in my notes? That kind of thing, right? We're comparing, we're contrasting. We are imprisoning ourselves in cognition. And judgment helps us to do that, right? I dare say it is the primary element of everything that our cognition does. And I'm not a scientist, but it just feels intuitive, right? It's possible that nothing pulls us away from spirit faster than judgment, right? Because it keeps us focused on the illusions of a material world. It keeps us in polarity. Now, we are in this physical realm in duality. We know all about that, right? We know all about that. But spiritually, we live in a very different experience, right? Nothing is harder on our spirits than judgment, because it's so foreign to our spirit. It's so foreign to our spirit. Our spirit is integrated. It's unifying. It's harmonic, isn't it? And we know this intuitively. So I guess the question is, whose big idea was all of this social construction of reality that we got going on, right? The social construction of reality. The world is what it is because essentially all of us agreed to it. We agree to it every day. We get up and we go to work and we follow all the rules, which I'm not saying is bad. I'm just saying, you know, rules are rules. And if we're not following them, we're breaking them and we're making them and we are changing them and we're amending them and we are rules, 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 right? And as creators, somehow we have agreed to this world that we've created. On some level, right? We've created a society that judges everything there is to judge. We've built systems of rules. We've trained groups of people who literally make rules. They judge rules. We have governments around the world, and we have it at every level. It's federal, it's state, it's local. It's in your neighborhood. You know, can you put your flag up? Well, let me go ask, right? We have courts at every level, making laws and judging laws, and it's everything that we do. And that's fascinating to me. It's literally fascinating because it feels so unnatural. When I feel into that, it's so foreign to me. But we did that. We did that. We do that. I mean, our you know, grand ages are built and destroyed on the idea of social constructions of reality. We do it every time. We do it every time, every age, every grand civilization, right? We build and we destroy. And the reason I think that's damaging is when we think about it, all of this social construction of reality, to coin a phrase, you know, it all masks our sovereignty as spirits. All of it. Every single bit of it. All of it undermines our sovereignty as spirits, right? And our spirits know this. I mean, we've captured beautiful, extraordinary celestial spirits of light in bodies that feel how unnatural all of this is. And we just can't break away from doing it. We just can't stop doing it. It is a fascination. One could sit and just, just blows the mind, so to speak, I guess. But when you think about judgment, this little word, judgment, this little thing, I mean, it probably happens in your brain 1,000 times a day and you don't even realize it anymore, right? This little word hinders all capacity to focus on a natural, energetic, spiritual unfolding of life. This natural unfolding, so that life flows endlessly as a present moment experience that is purely energetic, right? It's limitless and connected and awake and aware, and this beautiful opportunity to engage such an extraordinary experience as a spirit, as energy, as source knowing itself in a body that can feel and sense and, examine what is physical is such an extraordinary opportunity. And look what we do with it. Look what we do with it, just as an observation. Right? Just as an observation. So when we talk about practicing conscious awareness, okay, that's not easy. And now we know why. Now we know why it's not so easy to practice conscious awareness, right? Because a lot of what we're doing is removing habits of judgment that get in the way of bringing in peace and acceptance, right? Into our flow, the things that support the requirements of our sovereignty, our spiritual sovereignty, if you want to say that, our energetic sovereignty, right? Conscious presence and conscious awareness is really about owning our own inner authority, isn't it? Our spiritual integrity, right? We have responsibilities of our sovereignty and to our sovereignty and to the rights of others, right? To their own sovereignty. Spirits know this inherently. Spirits, this is the realm of the energetic, the celestial realm is guided by this very definition, this very idea, right? And in that idea, we see rules as self-observed, right? We police ourselves. We think, well, it's very natural. Do no harm. And as long as other people are doing no harm, then life is harmonious. Harmonious. There is harmony, right? These words seem to have a pattern here, right? And so we ask ourselves, okay, if we are living in this conscious awareness, we are in this present moment that is eternally harmonious, what else matters? What else needs to come in? What else needs to guide us? Right? What other rules do we need if our neighbor's rights are as important as our own? What else do we have to build in? And yet, look what we choose to do. Right? And rather than the energy of universe becoming an orchestra and harmonic and cordant, we somehow prefer this rule book of life, right? This rule book. Somehow that's our preference. And I think we could change that. If we even started as small as the idea of being still and allowing ourselves to observe and resisting judgment coming along with that, resisting the cognitive preferences as we just, you know, observe in our stillness, resisting the cognition that wants to come along for the ride, right? Maybe, if you think about it. So, hey, why don't we go back to our picture? Let's play a little bit more. Things have been, you know, kind of heavy. Our conversation gives us a lot to think about. And I want to deliver on the idea of just, you know, playing a little bit together. So let's go back to our picture. I hope that it's still with you. Get your pen out. Let's take another look at the scene that we just created. Okay. We created a scene, and in the scene, there's a boat on the water, and then there's a lighthouse there in the scene, and the lighthouse is beaming light, and we made sure that the light is on us now, right? The light is on us. A storm has rolled in, right? And we know there's a lighthouse keeper who's present because we've been on the radio with them. We've communicated with them. So we know that there's a lighthouse keeper who lives in the lighthouse. And you have communicated with him, and he has radioed you back. He's radioed the boat, right? He's called the boat. Okay. And he's seen the storm come in. He's seen many, many storms come and go in his whole life, right? That's what he does. He, you know, he has watched many a storm roll in. And so he's on the radio with you, and he tells you something very interesting as his best advice for you during the storm. Okay, so he's giving you his best advice during the storm. And this is what he tells you. He says, find some high ground and just be still. Now, I'm going to ask you to just think about that, consider it, and let it mean to you whatever it means to you without me defining it for you. But he tells you, find some high ground and just be still. That's what he says. So my question is, as we're playing here in our picture with our scene, how do you react to hearing that kind of advice in this particular situation that you're in? How do you react to hearing that advice from the lighthouse keeper? Be open with yourself, right? How does that sound to you, what he just told you, being in the circumstance that you're in? And you can write down your answer if you'd like on your paper. It's up to you. So let me ask you, look at your picture. How big was your storm in your picture? How big was it? Did it have gale force winds? Was it black and dark and torrential rain and high waves? Was it, you know, a little bit of rain, overcast clouds? How big was the storm in your picture? That may have something to do with the way you react to the lighthouse keeper's advice, right? So what does that advice look like for you right now in your particular scene, in your situation? How are you going to apply his advice in the situation that you have drawn yourself in your picture, in your scene, right? Is it similar in your life experience right now? Is it similar in your life experience right now? So I want to do one more thing to our picture before we leave it. And that is, I'd like to ask you, if you're inclined, to draw a sun peeking out somewhere on that picture. Take a minute and draw a sun peeking out. We're going to leave this scene feeling into the idea that the sun is always there. And it will come out again, right? It will come out again. It never leaves. Our circumstance clouds its capacity for us to see it. But it's always there, right? And you can draw whatever analogies you'd like to with our activity and Christ consciousness if you want to, Christos energy, if there's anything that might play in to anything that we've done together. So getting back to the idea of judging and judgment, and how maybe to think about what that means. I mean, what do we do when we judge something? We know it's an activity of the mind, but what is going on that is causing the results that we may not necessarily want when we judge something? So our brain regularly estimates and evaluates and predicts as a thought, okay, everything that comes in. Okay, so it identifies information in those ways. Now, when we identify with the thoughts being created by the brain, that the brain forms, then we judge those thoughts. Okay, we are identifying with the way that the brain has provided us the information. And so now we are in a relationship with that information. We are identifying with it, right? Let me give you an example to help us understand. Let's say, for example, you say, "Wow, I am mad with my boss right now." And so you're naming or identifying your emotion of how you're feeling, right? But let's say that you take it a little farther and you say, "I really feel like such a bad employee for being so mad right now." Or you might say, "Man, my boss caused me to feel just really bad about myself and really bad about my job with his bad attitude today." Or you might say, "You know, my boss really sucks for making me feel this way or for doing what he did today or you know, what have you." Those would be examples of blaming, right, the information by identifying with it, okay? So you're not just identifying an emotion, for example, you are now identifying with the information or the emotion. It's becoming a relationship that is personalized with you now. Okay. It's all mixed in with your experience of the information going on, right? That your brain has provided you. And so judgment essentially builds an identity with information that your brain creates, okay? It reinforces ego, if that makes any sense. And, you know, we might talk about that next week, identity and ego, and we're not going to, you know, judge those ideas right now, but they may be worth talking about as we take a look at ways to improve our spiritual environment within our physical bodies. That might be, you know, a good topic to think about. So let's end sharing one more idea if we can. And it's a little tricky, so I want to be, I want to handle with care. And it's the idea that sort of a supposal that let's suppose maybe that Christ came maybe to make Christs of all of us. And the idea is, you know, even greater things you'll do than I do. Greater things you will do than I have done, right? He makes those statements quite often in the literature of the day. And it leads us to question, what does he mean by that? So If it's the case that perhaps we're all called to be Christ using Christos, Christala energies, what does that mean? What is a Christ? Well, when we think about it, I mean, is it someone who engages a spirit that fully remembers how to navigate in sovereign control of our essential selves? You know, we remember our divine blueprint. We can integrate that blueprint into our intentions, into our behaviors, and not be separated by the physicality that we're experiencing, right? We can integrate source energies into our bodies fully. We can realign the architecture of our spiritual beingness, even in, you know, in this kind of physical experience. Essentially, we're moored to source, right? We have safe harbor. We have inner peace. We have alignment. Christ consciousness is our safe harbor. It is that anchor that aligns us to divine design. It's the remembrance of who we are. And that takes on more and more meaning with every action and act and behavior that we put into our day, being consciously aware, building in more and more light energy into our body, right? Does that make sense? And so this is an internal direction, right? That's perhaps why Christ was very adamant about the idea of go within. Go within. This is an internal direction. We are moving into heart space when we align, right? We are moving our energies into the sovereignty of a space that is divine. It's sacred, right? We are using gratitude and compassion as practices. We are redirecting our mind energy through the heart. Okay. These are all things that we know that we can do now because the heart is able. We just, you know, we just got some great news about new research that lets us know that those things are possible and in fact necessary. And now we can avail ourselves of those opportunities to align and to know that our good work will reap the benefits for a better spiritual experience, a better energetic flow through our bodies. So I'm so glad I could end with that idea. I'm hoping you'll take some time and maybe you have some time to think about it, see if it makes sense to you. But now, friends, we're at the end of our time together, and I want to thank you so, so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this time as much as I did. So I'll see you next Sunday, same time on BBS. And I want to thank you so, so much, BBS. You are Radio with Heart, and we are so very grateful that we can be together because of you and your good work. So friends, maybe get yourself a notepad next week. We will continue to do more self-reflection. And I just want to leave you with this idea that perhaps you can think about and internalize a little bit. And think about the fact that you are a divine blueprint. Purposeful. You were purposed out of the source of all things. Right? You were scribed and drawn out of the intentional, purposeful blueprint of source energy itself. And that is so magnificent. Okay? You are divine design. So take some time this week to maybe connect with your purpose, right? Connect with your purpose to your source energy. What is that inspiring you to do? What does that feel like? What does it look like? And as always, be kind to yourself in all things, friends. Be gentle with your heart space, right? Never stop swimming in the flow that is source. And remind yourself of that this week. Right? We can say things like source is with me as me in this divine blueprint. And we can say, Father Self, find me with your light. And we can be intentional with those things and know those things are true. So time for me to go home, friends. And until next time, have a wonderful week. I can't wait to be back with you.
Time to head home, friends. Thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.